96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, we are just about into the tax season, so you have to pay your taxes, but many of us will get refunds, and that means we may be spending our money. So not just your tax money, using your credit cards, going out to buy a car, all kinds of things we as consumers will do to open ourselves up to possible scams. Are you a victim? Have you experienced online scams or identity theft? Well, this week is National Consumer Protection Week, and tonight we are talking about how to protect yourself from consumer scams, whether it's online or in person. Our guest tonight is here to help us talk about that. He is Eric Friedman. He is the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County. Our phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Again, it is National Consumer Protection Week, and tonight we want to help protect you from consumer scams. Mr. Friedman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, you can never go wrong in trying to protect folks from scams, however it is, financial, whatever scam outside of that. But most of us are consumers. What is it we should be looking out for? And more specifically, how do you even know that you're a victim?
Well, Vermont, we have to be looking out for everything. You know, it's a full-time job to be an educated consumer, and the scams are out there. And the amazing thing about these crooks that engage in these kinds of scams and con artists is that they don't discriminate. They are happy to steal money from anybody, wherever they live. So we have to be so careful. Everything is so much more complicated. You know, when our telephone rings and we look at the caller ID on there, we think it's a local call because it says 301 or 202. That's all spoofed. We can't even believe that anymore. The crooks are out there trying to fool us from the second the telephone rings just by looking at the caller ID and see that it's coming from someplace else, but they make it look like it's coming from our hometown.
Well, Eric, I got to tell you, today, before I came into work, I think my phone rang at home at least 7 or 8 times. I don't answer the phone now, and they will use those the second 3 of your digits to make it seem like it's a local call. What can we do about that, number one? And two, should you just ignore answering the phone, or should you answer and say, hey, Eric, don't call here anymore? How should we handle that?
Well, just about not answering it is where some people are going. You know, you're talking about the robocalls that we get. It is the number one complaint that the Federal Trade Commission gets regarding robocalls. There are billions, not millions, but billions of calls that are shout out and every month regarding those. And the federal government tried to stop the robocalls. So, you know, they set up a thing where you can register your phone number so you don't get those calls. And for 15 years, the government has been fighting robocalls. And just about 2 months ago, the Washington Post ran a front page story in the magazine section of the Washington Post talking about robocalls and concluding that the government lost the battle. That it's these robocalls have not been stopped. We're still getting them. We're getting them on our cell phones. And so when that phone rings, you really don't know who's on the other end of that phone. I would suggest that people never buy anything when you get an incoming telephone call because you have no clue who they are. You haven't been able to do any research. You can't trust the caller ID information. So we've got to be so careful. The IRS phone scam, you talked about taxes and things of that sort. We have people now who are receiving phone calls from and they think they're coming from the IRS telling them that they owe back taxes and that they're going to be arrested and that the sheriff is on the way out to arrest them if they don't immediately wire money in supposedly to the IRS, but it's really just going to be going to the crook. And I have talked to people who've received that call, smart people who've received that call and were fooled by it because they were, in a sense, psychologically tied up. They got the call And they for a second, they believed it. And these callers and these scam artists and crooks are clever. Otherwise, they'd have to have real jobs like the rest of us. And this one gentleman that I'm thinking of, they tell you to go down and buy a Green Dot card and wire the money to them. And they say, don't hang up the phone. Stay on your cell phone. And they told the person to go down to the Giant or the Safeway and buy the Green Dot card. And then the person on the other end of the phone says, where are you now? Are you in the parking lot? Are you walking into Safeway? Have you bought the cards? These are the kinds of scams that are out there. And as soon as it's over, the person realizes that they made a mistake. But that gentleman that I'm thinking of lost several thousand dollars to that scam by the telephone, because the telephone is like a wallet. So we have to be so careful in today's society to worry about these kinds of scams.
And where are the calls coming from? Are they coming from somewhere in particular, or is it all over the place? Is it out of the country? Is it within the United States mostly?
It could be anywhere. A lot of these are outside the country. Some of them are boats in the Gulf of Mexico. It's almost impossible to trace. Once you've wired money with Western Union or with a Green Dot or prepaid card, there's virtually no way to know who got the money, almost no way to get the money back ever. So these crooks can trick us by sending us email messages, clicking on the wrong time, or by some of these phone scams. There's the grandparent scam where they call you and they pretend that your grandson or granddaughter is in trouble and needs to have some money wired to them.
Mm-hmm.
Frequently on email, we can get email messages that look like they came from our bank. They have all the colors and all the information, and they say something like, you know, we have to verify your account, please. Give us some of your personal information. And again, when we're sitting on our computer, we really don't know who's on the other end of the other computer when we've received an email message. And if we didn't place the email message, you just can't trust it. So these are the kinds of scams that we're bombarded with every single day.
It is National Consumer Protection Week. Our guest tonight is Eric Friedman, the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Have you been a victim of online or in-person scams, or are you concerned about it? We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Eric, we're talking about a phone. You mentioned email. Obviously, you can be scammed in person. But I want to go back, if I can, to a comment you made earlier when you said in terms of the robocalls, because I think once calls come into your home, it's so personal. You might be eating dinner, might be watching your favorite show, might be reading a book, and we know that can be very disruptive. But you said that the federal government is losing or has lost the battle. How did they lose it?
Well, because there's a technology race. They created this Do Not Call registry, and people registered their phone numbers. But the crooks found ways, like, for example, when they can spoof the caller ID phone number. So that's one trick that they've lost. So it's really a battle of technology. You know, the Federal Trade Commission had a contest. They said to all the smart people out there, can you invent something that we can use as an app to try and stop these calls from coming in? And the crooks then find a way to respond to that and change their approach. So, you know, the battle's not over yet. There are some things that the government keeps trying to come up with to really regain control of our telephones.
So is it worth us going back, re-registering on the Do Not Call list, or are you telling us folks who are harassed by these calls that it really doesn't matter? Can we hit buttons to try to diffuse the calls? Should we answer? I know I went back to that. I know I was speaking to someone here at the station today who said, you know, someone said, hey, I need you to do this. And the person said, well, how can I verify who you are? Verify yourself. And then they hung up. Will that discourage them from then calling back again?
Well, you're asking all the right questions. Absolutely. There has to be some new technology developed to really stop these calls. One thing that I think the consumer experts are really looking for is for the telephone carriers to get involved and to come up with some technology that they probably can develop so that they can tell when a call has been generated by a computer that it's a robocall, and they can intercept that call before consumers receive it. I think the truth after all this 15 years is that until something like that happens, that a voluntary system with the registering phone numbers is not going to do the trick.
Tonight, we're talking about how you can avoid becoming a victim of a consumer scam. Again, our guest tonight, Eric Friedman, Director of the Office of Consumer Protection from Montgomery County, and we'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. Clark calling from the district. Go right ahead, Clark.
Gentlemen, good evening. How are you all guys? How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing well. It's a great topic. Regarding the scam, I, for the last 2 years, I wind up finding this particular app on my phone, and I don't know how I got to it. It's called CM Security, and this app rejects all robocalls, every harassment calls, every scam call. It'll literally reject them and let you know what they are. They cannot get through to you. I mean, it's a great app, and I would recommend that to anyone. It's the best app out there regarding this matter. And I had it on my phone for the last 3 years, and I haven't had a problem with anyone calling me trying to scam me anything, because it lets you know right off the bat that. You know, that's a great app.
Thank you so much, Clark, for sharing that information. And Eric, do we have to be suspicious of these apps? Are they free? I know Clark said I don't think it cost him anything, if I heard him correctly. Would you recommend folks doing that for their cell phones if they can?
It might actually help. I'm not familiar with the one that Clark mentioned, but there is one called Nomo Robo, and the Federal Trade Commission has that one listed. It won their award, their contest for developing something, and it's completely free of charge.
What's it called, Aaron?
Nomo Robo.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the Federal Trade Commission and just check under robocalls, you'll see it there. I think if our website, we can link to it as well. Again, with everything, we do have to be a little bit careful. When we're getting some apps on our phone, lots of times there's things that you agree to and you hit the I agree, and yet none of us have ever read the many, many screens full of information. But as long as you're a little bit careful, that's probably going to be a big help for our cell phones. It may not be quite as helpful for the landlines. But it certainly is something we all as consumers should consider in terms of some technology to help protect us.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about protecting yourself from scams. All consumers out there, let's go back to the phone line. Sheila calling from D.C. Go right ahead, Sheila.
Hi, how you guys doing? This is a great topic. It happened to me, too.
What happened?
Well, I was looking for a secret shopper job,
mm-hmm.
And so I was emailing and doing, all this stuff online looking for work, and, I guess they know you're desperate, especially if you're looking for a secret shopper job, and I got this job thinking that it was a job, and then wound up realizing I had been scammed.
And what way?
They sent me a U.S. Postal money order, told me to cash it and to send them a certain amount of money, and I would keep money. And I know those scams, but I thought this was real because it had a job description attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a real postal money order. It had all the watermarks. It had everything.
And you cashed it, right?
And I cashed it at my bank.
But you had to send them more money than what the money order was, correct?
No. I had to send them part of it, and I was supposed to keep part of it. But what got me was the next, I did my report saying, this was a...
I think we lost Sheila, but...
24 hours, I got another one.
Hmm.
And I said, wait a minute, something's wrong. Because this one came in an envelope with no directions. And then I said, wait a minute. I started looking at the names, and it didn't even make sense. And I was like, oh, my God.
Sheila, I want you to hold that thought. We're going to keep you on the line. We want to sort of get to that because it sounded like she had an engagement there, something that was going back and forth and not just a one deal. and done. So I'd like to sort of follow up on that. It is National Consumer Protection Week, and we're talking about how to safeguard yourself against consumer scams. We're going to have to take a break, but we're going to continue this conversation on the other side. Calvin, stay right there. And Sheila, if you're still on the line, we'll get back to you. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with Jeff Brown is next on 96.3 WHUR. The Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, if you were not aware of it, this is the National Consumer Protection Week. Protecting who? Consumers from scams. And we all, even the most educated of us, even the best consumers, still need to be aware that there are scams out there, and we're all potential victims. And if you have been a victim, we want to hear from you. And if you found a way to avoid those scams, either through email, on the phone, or either in person, we also like to hear from you tonight. Here to help further this conversation is Eric Friedman. Eric is the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County. The phone lines are open. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Eric, when we went to break, we had Sheila, who had called from D.C., and she was on the line, and she talked about she thought it was a potential employer who sent her an envelope. It had a money order in it. She cashed the money order. She kept a little of the money. She sent some back that they asked for. Then they sent her some more information, and then she realized she didn't see a lot of names on there. How unusual is that to actually have some money sent to you, and they're saying, here, you keep part of it. Send part of it back to us, and then we'll sort of work out this employment thing. That sounds pretty elaborate. What is the purpose of doing that, the scammer, to do something like that in that manner?
Well, the crook has raised the bar, because to some extent we've become educated, and we know now that if someone tells us we've won a lottery, don't believe it. So what they do now is they say you've won the lottery, and they send you a check saying here's your first payment towards the $2 million that you've won, but you now just need to pay us some taxes or some administrative fee. So the consumer says, well, I'm smart enough to know that I really haven't won an award, but this one looks like it's real because check. It has all the security features on there, watermarks or whatever. When you bring it to the bank teller says it looks like it's probably real. There's no way the teller would immediately know it's not. And so the consumer deposits it. It will later bounce. And in the meantime, then the consumer sends a real check to the secret shopper or whoever it is for the dues or for the taxes or for the administrative fee. And, of course, the consumer's check for a smaller amount clears and the crook gets the money. And then a week later, the consumer finds out that the check that they received in the mail that looked so good was in fact a bad check, and it bounced. So these are the kinds of scams. I just very, very quickly, if you or I advertise something for sale on Craigslist, I guarantee you that we will do it frequently enough. Somebody will say to us, I want to buy the X that you're selling.
Sure.
And you only want $100 for it, but I'm going to send you a check for $150 because of some reason they have a check with some excuse. So if you could just send me the $50 change, it'll be great.
And I've seen it because I use Craigslist, and you see that. Should we, when we use Craigslist or any kind of system like that, it can be anything, OfferUp, Let It Go. If someone is asking for your phone number, should that be a red flag? Or not necessarily.
It probably should. I mean, keep in mind that those kinds of buying services are the wild, wild west. And so we've got to be very, very careful what we do. But we shouldn't be tricked into giving somebody some money back because they sent us too much. If they're sending us too much money, there's something wrong.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking tonight how to best protect yourself against consumer scams. Eric Friedman is here. He's the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County, Maryland. Eric, how do the scammers get our information?
Well, all sorts of different ways. You know, the old-fashioned way was dumpster diving, where they'd go into the trash and pull out our paperwork. So now we know we have to shred documents and things like that. Now they can get information from Facebook. You'd be amazed how much information people put on Facebook, and they can gather it that way. All different ways of tricking us to give information. there are many, many different ways out there, and we just have to be careful that we know to whom we're speaking when we give any kind of personal information.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Tina calling from Virginia. Go right ahead, Tina.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm calling because I wanted to share something that recently happened to me. I applied for a loan online.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how they ask you for your name, address, and all that, and your social security number, and all that. So when they did my credit check, they told me that I was approved for $3,000. So that's when they asked me for my bank information, my routing number, my account number, and I gave them all that. Then they asked for my username and password for my bank. So I gave them that information because I looked them up, mm-hmm. and they was a legitimate company. So somehow they deposited the check. They did a mobile deposit check in my bank account. I don't know how they did it because they never gave it to me, gave the check to me to do a mobile deposit from my own phone.
Mm-hmm.
So a few days later, my bank called me, and they asked me, did I mobile deposit a check for $3,000? And I said, no, I didn't mobile deposit a check. I applied online for a loan, and he told me I was approved for $3,000. So long story short, they told me that the check that was mobile deposit was counterfeited.
And so
now I changed, you know, my password and my username for my bank account, and now I have to go into the branch and close my account out. But I'm just scared because they have all my information, my social security number, mm-hmm. and everything. So what should I do? Should I do something like LifeLock?
Those are great questions, and I'm sorry about what you had to go through, Tina, but I think just your question and your experience probably can help some folks out there listening. Erica, what recourse does Tina have?
Well, it's going to be tough. I mean, once you've given out your password, and in fact, the words to the wise would be hopefully never be tricked into giving anyone your password, and make sure you have good passwords. One thing that probably Tina could do and the rest of us all should be doing is getting a free copy of our credit report every year to look and see what's on there.
Mm-hmm.
And also we can consider putting credit freezes and credit locks on the credit reports. To try and reduce the ability of some of these con artists.
So now that they have her information, though, her recourse is to do what? Go in, change her password, maybe even close out her bank account.
Absolutely.
Is that the most drastic thing that she probably should do? She could use the same bank but open up a different account within that bank. Would you suggest that?
I think that's absolutely correct. You really want to stop the bleeding. You know, once the damage has been done, that would be the best thing to do.
I've done that today, to be honest. I've done it today. I went inside the branch and closed that particular account out and opened up another account.
Well, I think you're on the right track, Tina, and best of luck with that. Hopefully everything will work out. Thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's stay in the district and go to Calvin calling with a question regarding scams. Go right ahead, Calvin.
My question is, I'm under mental health, right? And we have CSAs that become payees. And it's a thing. I'm just going to give you an example. Like right now, checks for $750 a month with SSI. If the caseworker told the client they're giving them $25 a week, that's only $100 a month. So the $650 is being pocketed by the caseworker because they'll tell the client, you can't get no money until next week, which is technically the first of the month coming back when the client gets the following check. My question is, how do you get these CSA workers, core service agency workers, that are scamming to take clients' money that are weak enough to let them be the payee? Because I was a scam of that when I was arrested and locked up, $1,637 was taken from me, mm-hmm. and then I had to become my own payee.
Mm.
But these other clients believe that they're supposed to have a payee, and they don't really supposed to have one if they don't want one. This is what the caseworker told them they had to do so they can take their money. How would you, you know, advise to scam, get the caseworker that's scamming?
Well, let me let thank you so much, Calvin, for your question. That's really a deep sort of question that I would think somewhere that has to be taken up with some higher authority in that agency, or at least a complaint would be filed. Is that the best way to go, Eric?
Absolutely. I think what Calvin is talking about, it sounds like the bad guy is a government employee, a caseworker.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So hopefully whatever department or agency, government that is, there's an inspector general or an ombudsman that you can report a government employee engaged in fraud.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Calvin, and I hope that information will help you. I think Calvin sort of broaches an interesting topic here, though, Eric. You know, we're talking about being a consumer and sort of on the outside being scammed, but I guess you can have scams internally where you're working, you know, maybe how you're being paid, whether or not you're being paid in the right manner. How big of an issue is that, sort of where you have to sort of watch things internally? And mostly, I guess I'm talking about probably your place of work in terms of how you're being paid, making sure you're being paid in the right manner. And maybe sometimes it doesn't even involve money. Does that ever come up? Is that ever sort of an issue that's on the round table of discussions?
It probably is. I mean, just human nature being what it is, these things probably do happen. Our office and most local government consumer protection offices would not handle that type of problem.
Mm-hmm.
We typically handle any kind of consumer transaction where you're buying something at a store or in a service. But I'm sure we need to be aware of those kinds of problems as well.
Calvin brought up something about how to go about sort of stopping this, or who to contact. If folks wanted to contact the Consumer Protection Services, specifically in Montgomery County or some other outside area, and you may not be able to speak to that, how do they go about it? Just basically go online, find the number, and call someone and make their complaint known?
That's right. You can Google us and find the Montgomery County Consumer Protection Office. We have a website. People can contact us by telephone. They can write to us. They can visit our office in person. D.C. has a Consumer Protection Office. Arlington has one. Fairfax has one. The state of Maryland also has one. So there are many different local government agencies out there. And just Google them and find out the best way to contact them.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. It is National Consumer Protection Week, and we're talking about protecting yourself as a consumer. He is Eric Friedman. He's the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County. And he is here to help guide us and help to give us some advice on how to make sure we are not part of a scam. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines and go to Howard calling from the Eastern Shore. Go right ahead, Howard.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I really appreciate the topic. I was just driving along and turned on. I was like, wow, you know, all the topics are generally are very useful, and this one is very great this evening.
Excellent.
So thank you for having me.
And where are you calling from on the Eastern Shore there, Howard?
Easton.
Easton, okay. I used to work down there in Salisbury. I just wanted to know where you were, but go right ahead. Okay.
Okay, yeah, we can hear you guys loud and clear down here.
All right.
Okay, so my question is in regards to, I know you talked about, you know, scams, telephones, stuff coming on, you know, internet or whatnot, emails, things like that. How about, you know, old fashioned letters, hard, you know, mail that you get, actually more specifically, like from an insurance company, say like, if you have a deceased, deceased relative and, you know, here, you know, after a number of years, and clear out of the blue, you know, you get a letter or something saying, we've been trying to contact this person, and the person has been deceased for a number of years, and then, you know, they'll have somebody else listed in this letter, you know, please contact us. Can your guest speak on that?
Sure. I want you to hold that thought, and Eric, hold your question because the music is playing, so we got to take a quick break. But I do want to address that because I think Howard brings up a really good question. Old school, you get a letter. What do you do with it? You know, a letter sometimes has more authority than when you get something email or someone calls you. So we want to address that. It is National Consumer Protection Week, and we're talking about protecting yourself as a consumer. We're going to continue this conversation. We just have to take a quick time out. We'll be right back. Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment, and tonight our focus is on consumer protection because it is the week for National Consumer Protection. And most of us out there who have just a little piece of change are consumers in some form or fashion. And we have to be aware that there are scams out there. How do we protect ourselves, and how do we identify when we're being scammed or when a scam is being presented to us? Eric Friedman is the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County, Maryland. He's here to talk with us about that, what we should look for, how we should protect ourselves. Phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you if you've been a victim, if you have some advice. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We've gotten some great calls so far, things that have happened to some who've given us some advice maybe on how to protect ourselves. We had Howard on the line who was calling from the Eastern Shore, and his question as we were going to break was that he is getting hard copy, paper, yes, regular slow mail, and in that mail, Eric, he is getting some paperwork that he thinks is scam material. Number one, how often or how prevalent now is it to get something in the regular postal mail that is sort of a scam, for lack of a better term, but that's the one we're using? And if you get it in the mail, does it seem to give off more of an authoritative sense? If you have a hard piece of paper with a letterhead at the top and some kind of stamp on it to say this is official.
Right. Well, I think that's what the crooks are hoping, that it feels like it's more legitimate. It's probably on the decline a little bit, probably just because of the cost of postage. I think first-class stamps are now 50 cents, so it's pretty expensive. But when you get something like that, and Howard talked about some type of insurance letter or things like that sort, we really, as consumers, have to do some research and find out, you know, where it came from, what the organization is, and contact maybe some other government agencies to do some research.
Who is more? Thank you so much for your call, Howard. We appreciate that. Is there a group that is more susceptible to scams, be it gender, be it age, be it ethnicity? Is there sort of a red flag for some of those out there who are more susceptible to being targets also?
Right. I think there is. Vulnerable consumers are typically seniors, not necessarily because they're less educated. They may have the same education, but seniors tend to be more trusting. And so they're less suspicious of these kinds of scams. Recent immigrants are typically targets. People who are in desperate needs too. You kind of hear what you want to hear in terms of some of these scams, and you hope that some of these work at home scams might work or things like that. So clearly, seniors and new immigrants and those in need can be targeted.
Are there any particular scams that are more prevalent in the Washington metropolitan area that tend to pop up, or we just pretty much get the general what any other area would get?
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it's pretty much the run the gamut of all the scams that are out there. We'll get them here. It's just something that we as consumers have to be aware of almost every day.
One caller called in and said she gave them her password, someone. And I know that has got to be right at the top of the list. And I think it was her bank password.
Right.
And I'm sure she understands that now, but that has to be at the top of the list of a no-no. How often should you be changing your password? Because many of us do online banking. We may pay our insurance bill online. We may pay our phone bill online. And you have to use your password. Some of us leave that locked in. So when you pull up the page, it automatically, brings up your account. Number one, is that a good thing? Should you always type in your password? And how often should you be changing it?
Well, I think the experts tell us we really need to select the password carefully. I've read that some people, a large percentage of people, use the word password as their password.
No. and
I know it gets a little bit tricky to remember all these different passwords.
Right.
But that's one of the things that we need to do to keep ourselves safe on our computers.
How often should you be engaged if you're dealing with someone on the phone? Should you be engaged with someone who calls and asks you questions? We talked a little earlier where I said a coworker started asking the person who called some questions, and once they couldn't answer, they hung up. How should you handle that? Should you engage with them, and should we be fearful that the longer you're on the line, possibly they can track something, or is that, am I doing too much of an iSpy kind of Mission Impossible thing?
Well, I don't think there's a whole lot that they can track, but if it's an incoming call, I wouldn't give it much credibility whatsoever, because you just do not know who's on the other end of that phone if you haven't placed the call. And so I would not engage really in any conversation.
And again, as you mentioned earlier, if you're constantly getting these sort of robocalls, and you don't answer the phone, but yet they keep calling because you're not answering, you would recommend going to some of these sites to sort of connect your phone to a no-call list, correct?
Right.
That's really the only way to stop it.
I think that's the best way, and answering, not answering as well, because once you start to answer, then you get on a reload list, and they know that they've got a list of phone numbers that work.
All right. We still have a phone number that you can call. We still have a few more moments to take some of your calls on this issue. National Consumer Protection Week, how to protect yourself is what we're talking about tonight. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Eric Friedman, he is the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County, Maryland, and he is our guest tonight. Eric, what about the issue of face-to-face scamming? And what I mean about that is, we've talked about email, right? That's sort of a passive kind of thing, maybe. Phone calls really aren't as passive. But now we're dealing with face-to-face scams. You go in to try to buy a new car. Would that be considered scamming if they try to sell you the undercoating when the undercoating is already there, if they want to put extra on there, but it's already on there so you don't need to pay for it? Would we consider that a scam, or do you just need to be an educated consumer because that salesman is just trying to sell you something that you can reject if you want it? Is it fair to call that scamming?
We probably wouldn't call it scamming. We'd probably refer to it as tricks of the trade.
Okay.
And you want to be aware of the tricks of the trade. You pick a good example. You know, buying a car is still a negotiated transaction for the most part. And we as consumers might buy a car every few years, but the salesman is much more advanced than we are in terms of the negotiation process. And so it's good to do a little homework and to learn about some of the tricks of the trade, like not buying products that are not worth the extra money, and to know some of the tricks that the salesman might do. Now, keep in mind, you know, there are lots of honest merchants in Montgomery County and other parts of D.C. and Virginia, but there are some merchants that will try to take advantage of consumers, make extra money, especially if they're working on commission as salespeople. And so we as consumers need to know some of these tricks and to be aware of it before we go in. And the car dealership is one of those situations where, unfortunately, to a great extent, consumers can still be taken advantage of if they don't do their homework before they go in there.
And you mentioned tricks of the trade. Do you get calls that are more aligned with tricks of the trade, but people feel like they've been scammed, and you feel that, or not you feel, but you have to sort of educate the consumer that, well, this isn't a scam. This is more of you not being aware that the salesman can offer this. You just need to know it's something that you don't need, or what the actual cost of this is. So do you find yourself in many ways educating the consumer maybe after the fact?
Absolutely. That's a very excellent point. Sometimes consumers don't realize that these are not necessarily scams, but that they feel like they've been taken advantage of. And we have a consumer protection law that we enforce that says a merchant cannot engage in deception or misrepresentation of a material fact or an omission of a fact. But that doesn't stop them from being a good salesperson and getting us to buy maybe more than we thought we were going to be going and purchasing.
Now, you're here representing Montgomery County's Office of Consumer Protection, and I'm sure you're aware of other state agencies. Are there some in particular where folks, if they need help, should go to particular agencies? And if so, how do they find them? How do they go about doing it? And should they try to sort of pinpoint what their issue is to get the best help and go to that particular agency?
Yeah, sometimes it's a little bit tricky to find the right agency to go to, depending upon where you live. If you want to go to a consumer protection agency that has jurisdiction where that transaction took place, where the purchase was made. If, for example, you have a landlord-tenant problem or question, you want to go to a landlord-tenant office in Montgomery County. The landlord-tenant office is part of a housing department, a little bit separate from our consumer protection office. But with Google and search tools, it's pretty easy to find the right agency, and hopefully they can help. And some agencies are a little bit better than others, of course. And we like to pride ourselves of trying as best we can to help consumers. And we've been around for 47 years in Montgomery County. So sometimes we can point you in the right direction, even if we can't help.
Now, this question may be self-evident, but I'll ask it anyway. What is the purpose of National Consumer Week?
Well, I know it doesn't sound quite as exciting as Mardi Gras, we don't have any beads or...
But maybe more important.
Or fireworks. It really, the purpose is just to focus attention on the problems and needs and to help educate consumers, at least have an excuse to do so officially once a year.
And is there a worse case that you've seen in your time? I know you started when you were 21 in the office and you're only 29 now, but in your 8 years... is there one case that you've seen as the music is playing that really struck you as egregious?
I think the worst cases are scams or deception with regard to funerals and funeral preparations. It seems to me when we've lived the good life and it's our time to exit, at that point we should get a waiver, we should get a pass, and we shouldn't be subject to any kind of deception or scams, and unfortunately there are still some in the funeral industry.
And what we know is that there are many, many businesses out there that are good businesses, more good than bad. Obviously, when we're talking about scams, it puts the focus maybe on the negative, but we want to know that we do know that there are good businesses out there, but for the bad, we should know about those and be on the lookout for them. Eric Friedman, you serve that purpose. We thank you so much for being here with us to help expand our conversation and give us even more insight than we already had. Eric Friedman is the director of the Office of Consumer Protection in Montgomery County. He's promoting National Consumer Protection Week. We thank you for your phone calls tonight. That's the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, March 6th. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.